Welcome back to the Christian Life Podcast, where we have good conversation for practical Christian living. Today, we're on episode number 6, and we're going to be talking about discipleship. We are your hosts. I'm Michael Brazier, and sitting across from me is Art Nurnberg. So, we're going to talk about discipleship. Let's start out with the basic question. What makes a disciple of Jesus?
It's an important question because that's the fundamental thing we were told to do is to go and make disciples. We got to go make them. That's what the church is about. It's about making disciples. It's not just about seeing people converted. It's about making them into a disciple. What is a disciple? Well, that we're going to be thinking probably about a number of the things it says about it. But the core of it is they're a person who really has learned. They're a learner from the Lord. A disciple is a person who learns from, and the way it's presented in the New Testament is they're a person who learns from by walking with. So it's not just a learn from a book, it's a learn from experiencing the Lord in a moment-by-moment way. Yeah.
So it's being faithful to the Lord, walking with him. What are the other aspects that doesn't, like, when I think of discipleship, it includes, I think of submission to his will. Is that a key tenet of it?
That's the big thing. And again, it's pictured in the New Testament as the Lord has a plan. He's going along. And the way he describes it is, I meet him at a corner. I'm on a path. I'm living a life. Before I was converted, I was living a life. And I had a plan for that life. I had ways that I thought, reasons that I got up in the morning, what I thought would make me happy. It all that came from my culture and my family and all the rest of it. But I had that. It was clear in my mind. I come to the Lord, and the Lord says, I want you to give up this path and join me on my path. Now, that.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is now I'm going to start to walk with him in this. And as I walk with him, I begin to realize that the things which I used to think were core aren't core. So I learn that as I go. That's what discipleship is, a learning process. But at the core, I have to decide at that crossroads, I have to decide, am I ready to let go of this? And the Lord's very strong on that you have to make up your mind, are you going to let go or not? Because I want to teach you the way of life. But you're not on the path of life. So you have to let it go and accept the fact that I'm gonna be the one that teaches you.
Yeah. That's really good. So when I think of discipleship, I kind of think of like what Jesus was talking about, there's three kind of key passages on discipleship. There's like the call of Matthew, which is a big one.
Right.
And then there's later on in Matthew where he talks about up your cross, right, and following him.
Right.
And then at the end, there's kind of like the Great Commission, which is go make disciples. It's like the actual call, right, to now I've taught you how to do this and now you go do it.
Right.
Is that kind of, are those the three big passages?
Are there other those ones? Are three of them. There's two in two in Luke.
Okay.
Two passages in Luke. One of them is a repeat of the passage in Matthew where the Lord speaks to his disciples. That's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Then there is another passage late in the history in Luke where he turns around the disciples and says, if you want to come after me, you know, he says that. And then there is probably to fill it out, you have to look at what he says about being a disciple in John chapter 12. That's the very end of his ministry. And part of that, it makes it helpful to us because those passages are stretched out over the entirety of his ministry. So it's obvious when we think that how condensed the New Testament Gospels are. You got 3 years of ministry. We got them in an hour and a half of conversation. Yeah. You realize that this must have been a subject which was constantly being hammered because he doesn't just bring it up once. He brings it up over and over again. I mean, four different times. And as you say, finishes out by telling him, now you go and do this. You go and make other people, teach them to do this. And so
it's anyway, central to the teaching of Jesus in the New Testament. And it's obvious because he called 12 men to be his disciples.
Right.
And that was discipleship a more common thing in that day and age in the, like the idea of following a teacher.
Yeah, that's basically the way men of that day learned. Okay. I mean, you found out who was a teacher. The universities weren't really so much there as the fact that, okay, find somebody who knows and then attach yourself to them and then let them instruct you. But it's more than just, a learning process. Mm-hmm. It's the idea. It has to do more with just learning a skill. It has to do with learning a way of life. So discipleship was oriented so that, so the Pharisees taught each other by discipleship. You joined Paul joined Gamaliel and you just stay there, but you live with him. You actually live right alongside of him. And in that life process, you figure out it's a way of life more than just say a skill of a particular skill, Mike.
Okay. So for, I think the next thing I want to do is go to the call of Matthew.
Okay.
That's a big one. And I know you've talked a lot about it. I remember having class with you on, we had the follow me class. So,
right. Yeah.
And at essentially the follow me phrase, like where Jesus calls Matthew to follow him, is a call of discipleship.
Right.
So I'm going to read the passage. It's Matthew 9:9-13. Essentially, I'll just read all of it. But verse 9 is the big one. And it says, so Matthew 9:9-13, this is the ESV. As Jesus passed on from there, he saw a man called Matthew sitting at the tax booth. And he said to him, follow me. And he rose and he followed him. And as Jesus reclined at the table in the house, behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were reclining with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? But when he heard it, he said, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice, for I came not to call the righteous, but sinners. So I read all that because it gives good context to the passage. It's kind of one unit. So that was a big moment because we're reading from the Gospel of Matthew. Yep. This is his testimony and his personal thing. In I think it's the ESV calls him Matthew, but in other translations, does it call him Levi?
Yeah, it's in other in Book of Matthew, he identifies himself as that person.
That person. Okay.
In Mark and Luke, he's called Levi. Okay. Which is probably what his name was.
Okay.
Most likely, Matthew is the name that the Lord gave him.
Yeah.
But we don't know that.
I don't know that for sure. So what did the call of Levi, call of Matthew, huge thing. And Jesus already called four disciples prior to this.
Yeah, that we know of, yeah.
And then he kind of comes, he's in the same town, and he comes up to Matthew at the tax booth. Do you think Matthew already knew who Jesus was at that point?
It would have been hard for him not to know.
Okay.
Jesus has made Capernaum, which was just a small town, really. It only covers about 11 acres, I think it is, if I remember correctly. Which, again, we have a campus here. That would mean that entire town is on this campus.
Yeah.
At the time of the Lord, probably, again, there's questions between different people, but probably 2,000 people lived there. He was there for months.
Yeah.
There was a big tax office there, so that's why Levi was there. There were a lot of tax collectors because of a main trade route that was a tax spot right outside their city where they had to tax. So that's why the centurion was there. That's why Levi was there. But real honestly, Peter and Andrew and James and John would have all known who he was. You couldn't know you couldn't live for years in a town of 2,000 people.
Yeah.
Where everybody does everything on the street. You don't hide. You don't drive to some other place. They would have known exactly who he was. And he would have, because Jesus' miracles are being performed, a lot of them in the early miracles are being performed right there in Capernaum. It's a very good chance that he's heard the message, which to me makes sense.
Yeah.
Because Jesus comes up and gives him one line, and you can kind of look at that like it's maybe a Pied Piper coming up there and then, follow me. But he would have known. He would have known. I mean,
he had heard the teachings. And where it is in Matthew is, I don't know if it's necessary, necessarily chronological, but it's after a lot of the teachings of Jesus that would have been in that area.
Yeah.
And so obviously most likely he would have known all of those things, heard him, communicated.
And the teaching was done right on the street.
Yeah.
And the tax collecting was done on that same street.
Yeah.
Is where everybody was. Yeah. So, he would have been watching Jesus and, observing.
Yeah.
And,
I was in Israel, and I know you've been to Israel too. We went to Capernaum, what they think is Capernaum, which probably is. And then we went up this hillside, and there was where they thought the Sermon on the Mount was preached.
Yeah.
And for different reasons. But it was like right there. It was basically across the street and up the hill.
Yeah.
And if you had thousands and thousands of people sitting along that hillside listening to Jesus, it would have been be hard to imagine that the stir of Jesus, the excitement surrounding him, especially in that early part of his ministry, wouldn't have, Matthew wouldn't have missed it.
And you kind of pick that up in the Sermon on the Mount, that it really sounds like here's a guy who was spoken to at a time, was crucial time, because his accounting of the Sermon on the Mount sounds exactly like a man who was listening to it at a crucial moment in your life. You know, you've known that in your own life. I mean, I've heard thousands of sermons by now, but there's some that I can almost remember verbatim because, hey, that's when the Lord was really, he was really dealing with me. And if you look at the Sermon on the Mount, it really sounds like here's a man who was primed to hear the truth of the gospel, and he was really, really thinking about things. And then when Jesus calls him to follow, that's not new to him. He knows exactly what he's doing in that case.
Yeah. Okay. So when Matthew was called by Jesus, well, in a sermon that you kind of gave on the topic, you talked about that Jesus didn't see a tax collector. He saw a man.
Right.
That's a really big point.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. I think that's a part that is so important with Matthew. And then if you compare the different accounts in Luke and Mark, they both say that there was a tax collector. And I think that feature thing, but when Matthew relates it, he says this, and Jesus saw a man who was at a tax office. And I think that becomes really crucial to us, is that God doesn't see us as what we're identified with in our job or anything else. He sees a person. He sees it. And Matthew was conscious of that he sees me differently than the whole rest of the crowd would see me, because everybody else would have seen him as a tax collector. It is interesting that the other gospels don't even identify him as Matthew. That would have been embarrassing to be identified as a former tax collector. But Matthew does it himself. It's Matthew that tells us that, I was that man. I was that man. But he saw me, and he realized that I was a man just like Peter was a man. He was a fisherman.
Yeah.
He didn't have the same baggage in life that I had, but hey, Jesus looked at me and saw me. And that's a big deal.
Do you think that's one of the reasons why he then went and added on that? He wrote about that conversation that Jesus had with the Pharisees in regards to eating with tax collectors and sinners, as they saw. And Jesus said, like, well, no, I came to save sinners, not the righteous.
Yeah.
And he desires mercy and not sacrifice. Yeah. Was that like a really big thing as a former tax collector that Jesus came and sought him out and
called him
in front of other people too?
Yeah.
It wasn't a private thing.
Yeah. And I've often wondered what did Peter think?
Yeah.
What would it like? And it's a big help. I think that story is really tremendous because it helps us to understand, what it means to be in the church. You know, Peter didn't get to choose who was going to be on the team.
Yeah.
Jesus chose who was going to be on the team. And Peter and James and John, they were going to have to live with the scandal of this. That was a scandal.
Yeah.
For Jesus to be identified with a tax collector, these guys were hated. I mean, they were hated. Mm-hmm. They were the other guys. And now he's on the team, and you have to be identified with him. And it would have been... So I think that is why he tells that story, that he not only called him, but then when he had that, he called his friends together, mm-hmm. Jesus was willing to come and talk with them. Mm. We don't know what happened in that as far as they went, but he wasn't ashamed to do that.
Yeah.
Lord's after real people. no matter what their condition is. And they, we have to be after real people in their condition. Yeah.
Where they're at. Because, I mean, if you never go to people that are actually hurting and hungry for the gospel and where they're like, people live in really interesting situations and people are lost and they have no concept of Christianity and of Jesus and the hope of the gospel. And so like you have to go and meet them where they're at. And I think sometimes it's so easy to fall into the category of like, well, those people will go to the mission field and they'll meet them over there because they obviously don't have the gospel and wherever it is that they have a heart to go. But more so we have this huge ability to meet the needs of the people and give them the hope of Jesus, like right here, like even in Greenville, because like it's known as the Bible Belt, but it's not really the Bible Belt. I mean, culture has changed. And so I think that's a really incredible opportunity. You don't have to go far. You can just see the person at your Starbucks or that wherever you're going at the store and just they're right there. And but they need Jesus. The reality is that Jesus always was calling sinners, not the hypocrites who claim to. And he always has really harsh language for the Pharisees.
Yeah.
If you're not one of his categories that Jesus was very strong with them, calling them. So, well, what if, let's talk about that phrase, follow me.
Okay.
And what does that mean? Like, what is Jesus actually saying in that phrase? Because a lot that is said in that
place. Yeah.
I have four things that I think it's kind of saying, but can you talk about what you think it's kind of saying? Okay. Like, what is Jesus asking?
I was helped a lot when I was studying this out. You know, what is it? Jesus just comes up to him, and I think it's a fascinating passage because I was thinking, what would it be like if a man just walked up to you on the street and said, follow me?
Yeah.
All right. What is he saying? And how would I respond? You know, and the word was helped by A.T. Pearson, or not A.T. Pearson, Robertson, A.T. Robertson, in his word studies. Mm-hmm. And he goes into this word a good bit. And he says that the word, and it's actually the most common way that Jesus called people. It's the most common thing he said to them was just follow me. Okay. And he says the word follow doesn't mean to get behind and follow like in a train. Mm-hmm. All right. And it doesn't mean just to follow the teachings of. It means the word itself means to join somebody along a path and to fellowship with them, to join them on their path, okay, and to fellowship and to learn from them, but just to be with them, all right. But you join them on their path. That's the point. If you're going to follow somebody. That's where we had that picture before, you know, the two paths. I was on a path. I meet the Lord. I have to leave my path and join his path. Right? I have to agree to that. And that's what's happening for Matthew. In his case, it's dramatic and it's got application that we can't kind of generally come into. There was a person, Jesus, standing in front of him. That man, Jesus, was leaving town. Levi Matthew is at a tax office doing his job. Jesus says, join me on my path and I'm leaving. He doesn't say that, but he is. Mm-hmm. Matthew he can't stay at that tax office and also be on this path. In other words, you got on one path or the other.
Yeah. There are two paths, and he has to do
He has to make a decision here. He's either going to continue on his path, which was one to make money, to be something, to get that out of this earth, or he was going to join Jesus on his path. But he couldn't do both in this particular case because it was physically impossible, because there's a physical Jesus there. All right, so that presents a picture to us of the drama, and Jesus was not afraid to ask him for this. He wasn't ashamed to say, hey, I don't care what you've worked hard to be. And he had, to be a tax collector where he was, he had to pull strings and he had worked himself into a great position. I don't care. I'm asking you to follow me and you give it up. So that coming, that following him, it's a dramatic picture.
Yeah.
we don't have that. We have to think now, what does that really mean to us? Because when I was converted, I didn't meet a physical person.
Yeah. Wasn't in the room.
No, he wasn't there.
We're going out the door.
Yeah, it would have been so much easier because then you just go where he goes. Yeah. What would that mean to me? And that's where we have to think about how does that apply? And that's where the Lord helps us with other passages.
Yeah.
But we see this in the passage, in particularly it's in Luke, I believe, where he is saying this, that when Levi hears this, the order, it's a very interesting order. And it says, and he left everything and got up and followed him. It's interesting to me, the wording of it. You can't push it too far, but it's interesting, the wording, because to me, the right way to say it would be he left everything, or he got up and left everything and followed him. Because the first thing I have to do is get up from the desk. But the way it's written in Luke, or it's just this way, and he left everything. In other words, he made a mental choice about what was happening here. And then he got up and followed. But before he ever got up, he made a decision. And in that decision, he was breaking from everything that was on the path that he had been on. And now committing himself to the Lord. Now, the other side of it that comes up, which we were talking about just a moment ago, which we have so much trouble with, is this. Levi was still the same man as he was before. He didn't know what it meant to follow. I mean, he didn't know what the ramifications of following were, but he had made the choice to join Jesus. And now he has to learn. And that's where we run into trouble, as you say, in churches. Sometimes people don't want this person who's been converted in their church. They want them to straighten up first. You know, we want you to be totally sanctified before we can, you know, and then bring you in. But Levi was still on tag. I mean, his mentality is now I'm going to follow the Lord. But he doesn't know what that's going to mean.
Yeah.
He just knows that Jesus is a particular kind. He's heard some teaching. Hmm. But I'm sure disciples all the way through are continuously learning. Mm-hmm. What is humility? What is Lord like? What does it mean? What's his way?
Yeah.
He's not a sanctified man. But he has made a big change in his heart. Now I'm off this path. I'm on this path. Now I got to figure out what that path is. And that's where it's important for us.
Then you start the process of sanctification. Right. And that is a lifelong process.
Yeah, that's lifelong.
It's interesting. Recently, there was a big controversy on Twitter, which is a horrible place with lots of controversies. But one of them was actually about this person who left a industry that wasn't good, and they became a Christian.
Right.
And there was a whole debate among Christians on Twitter about whether or not had they left all of it fully enough. Mm. And like, well, this and that. And
yeah,
but it's like it all happened within a month. And so suddenly, like, they're trying to follow the Lord. And like, there's that process of sanctification where right. The Lord calls you to himself first. And then you slowly begin to realize, like,
right.
It's like an onion, and he peels off all these layers that are like, oh, also this and this and this.
Yeah. And, because after he was converted, after he begins to follow, he then takes Jesus and calls a party for his friends. These are his friends.
Yeah.
They haven't stopped being his friends.
Yeah. And they haven't left being a tax collector.
No, they haven't. They're still tax collectors. They're still in that place, and they're still despised by all the people around. Yeah. But so he hasn't renounced his friendships. He just is himself ready to follow the Lord, but he's still vitally tied to that group. Yeah. I mean, he's going to be following the Lord, but he's
amazing
tied to them,
because Jesus then is willing to go there, knowing the controversy that would cause,
right,
like, with the Pharisees, because Pharisees are also there, and they're very aware of what Jesus is doing, and they call him out for it, because why would you do that? And I saw this quote by Matthew Henry, kind of on that topic, and it said, if you're not pleased with others obtaining the grace of God, then it may be justly suspected that you do not have the grace of God in your own life.
Yeah, that's true. Amen.
So you're like really bothered that people would find the Lord Jesus in their life, because for whatever reason you think that their past life was not good, which none of ours is good. So I mean, like, it's a kind of a bad argument. But anyways, so I thought that was a good point when I was reading through his commentary on the passage. So what do you think is what entails follow me for us, like as a Christian today? What is Jesus calling us to when he calls us to follow him?
Okay. We're going to have to learn from him. We're going to have to walk with him. But it is interesting that if you put all the passages together, mm-hmm. the Lord does say, he doesn't go into all the details, but he tells you where you're liable to step aside from doing this. Mm-hmm. Because he was fully aware that a person could start this path of following him and then run into problems. Mm-hmm. So he's always very bold about saying right at the beginning, what is it that, what do you need to, in your heart, give up or step aside from if you're going to join me, all right? And it really is, it comes down to just a few areas. It doesn't give the detail on it. Mm-hmm. Of course, with Matthew, the issue is, hey, you're on a career path. You need to understand that if you follow me, your career path might be over. Yep. It may or may not, you know. Some converts didn't, but some did, and mm-hmm. that's not up to you. A second big one is reputation. Real clear about that if you love your father, mother more than me, if you love people, if you love the opinions of other people more than you have loved me, then, hey, you're never going to be able to follow me. And when he says that, he says, you can't be my disciple. Basically, again, there's different ways that could be interpreted, but basically it's this, that I can't teach you. I can't teach you as long as that is governing your thinking. If you're governed by public opinion, you won't learn from me, because I'm the kind of person who takes on a tax collector, and I'm not ashamed of that.
Yeah.
And if public opinion is against me, well, that's okay. Mm-hmm. So on my path, public opinion doesn't matter. Yeah. You better think that through, because public opinion is big to human beings. He puts possessions out there. Mm-hmm. He says that possessions, if you're not ready to let that go, as we said, if you're not willing to give up all your possessions, that doesn't mean to give them away. It means to take your hand off of them.
Yeah.
It's
called the retreating young ruler. And he's like, sell it and follow me. And he couldn't quite do it.
Yeah. And then, of course, you have that issue which you're aware of with family. I mean, because that also governs your thinking. And that's another form of public opinion. But you've got to come to a place where you follow me, not what your family wants, which was huge in the day when you were living in a culture which is governed by clans.
Yeah.
You were part of a clan, and that was big. We're kind of individualistic in the United States, so we don't pick up the full pressure that those guys were under. Hmm. So he says these are the areas, but you just have to be aware of it. Anyway.
Yeah. When I was working on this, there was a quote by Bonhoeffer. I liked it. He said, the call of the cross, which he was talking about following Jesus, is not a terrible end to an otherwise God-fearing and happy life, but it meets us at the beginning of our communion with Christ.
Right.
And so it's a call to begin fellowshipping with him, essentially. So follow me is leaving your path and coming to Jesus.
Right.
So what do you think, what is a practical way we can apply this, like, to our lives, to my life?
Okay, the call to discipleship, again, Lord's, I have to face the fact that it is a serious call, mm-hmm. right? And it's a decisive call. Mm-hmm. It is decisive at the beginning. I mean, again, I don't know all the ramifications of it. When I came to the Lord, I didn't know all the ramifications, but I did know the decisiveness of it. All right, and decisive is because of the pictures he uses. If any man wants to come after me, let him deny himself. And deny himself in that, I mean, Peter denied the Lord. Same word. Peter denied the Lord. At the crucial moment, he turned his back on Jesus. I don't know him.
Yeah.
That's denying. Jesus says, if you want to follow me, you have to turn your back on yourself. Deny yourself. So you don't. You disassociate yourself from your own self. If in it, when he's talking self there, he's talking about that path you were on. This path that Levi would have wanted to go down because he had a desire to be rich, apparently, because that's the only reason that maybe I become a tax collector. You're going to be an outcast, but you're going to be a rich outcast. So he's on this path. To deny himself means that all that he had planned, all that he thought would give him real experience of wonder in life, he's going to have to say goodbye to. And take up a cross. That's a brutal picture. We won't go into all that, but
we can talk about that next week.
So. Yeah, it's take up a cross. He says, and that means die. When you take up a cross, you're going to die. Again, same picture. And then what? Then join me. But it's real strong language there. I mean, it would have been those language would have been shocking. People would have been disgusted with it. It's the kind of thing that's not. We don't talk about that in religion, anyway. But he did. So practically, I have to come to a conclusion. What is it? What is it in my life? What do I expect out of life? This is what a person has to do when they come and when they hear the call of God. What am I expecting? What do I want? What's my path? What are the things that I think will make me happy? And I've got to take a long look at that. And when the Lord speaks to me, I've got to say, you know what? None of that may ever happen if I take this other path. Doesn't guarantee it won't happen, but none of it may happen. And I have to accept that. That's why in the parable of the sower, you have those problems. Some seed, it got rejected right off. Some fell in a place where they were really glad about following the Lord, and then they found out by and by persecution arises. Now they found out that other people don't like this, and they fall away. So Jesus says, at the beginning, why don't we just do this at the very beginning? This could cost you your reputation. And in the third one, it says that they try to follow the Lord, but by and by, the deception of the deceitfulness of riches, the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, wealth, starts to crowd at their heart and they fall away. Why not just get this settled at the very beginning? That life isn't in money. Let's let it go. Yeah.
That's really good.
Okay.
Well, good. Well, that concludes the episode for today. It's a little bit longer than the past couple weeks, but next week we are going to be talking about the cross, kind of in the same topic. I just want to keep going on it because I have way more than we went to today. As always, you can follow us on Instagram, X, and Facebook. You can listen to all of our previous episodes on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Until then, may the Lord bless you. We'll see you again next week.